Yeah. I mean, first we got to figure out that climate change is real.
Is the jury out?
My friend Maddie loves telling people that I am constantly denying climate change. And I'm like, no. And I've said this on the pod, dude. Like, I'm already too tired to even repeat it. But pretty much it's just the language around climate change, saying save the earth. And it's like, no, you got to save yourselves. Mm. Like, we're not a meteorite.
We need to speak practically about climate change in terms of human survival.
Yeah, because people are like, climate change is hurting the earth. And I'm like, the earth does not care, bitch.
Well, it's like, yeah, it hurts, but like in the way that like it gets a cold and then it shakes it off.
Exactly. You know?
We're the cold. It's shaking it off. It takes like one or two earth days to like deal with humanity, the plague. But hopefully we want to be like COVID and just kind of coexist among it semi-peacefully in this kind of state that we now semi-exist with COVID, right? It's like, if we could just be Earth's COVID, I think that's humanity's goal.
You want to do the standing?
For now.
Fuck until you, I feel I'm going to stand too.
Then stand. There's nothing that said we can't do
this
standing.
This is, I'm not an audience member at one of your stand-up shows, Brian.
Well, it was a very stand-up heavy weekend and a very stand-up heavy.
Tell us about it, Janet.
You were there.
Yeah.
And you were there?
I first off love the Glendale Room.
Wow.
Filming a special at the Glendale Room is like giving Maria Bamford energy.
Totally. Right? Totally. And I've seen her at the Lyric Hyperion, which is like the spiritual sister of Glendale Room.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really lovely to hear. Shout out Austin Silver, shot his special at the Glendale Room, and I opened for him, and you were there as an audience member, so supportive, and I cannot thank you enough.
That's
and
sweet, I'll shout out
Dan Quinn,
awfully sweet
Hong.
For someone that bought me a ticket. Well,
Austin needed people. It's his special.
That's sweet.
Yeah, and you've seen Austin, you're a fan of his, so.
And it gave me a lovely opportunity to catch up with Dan and Quinn, your two bromies, from a different romie.
I kind of give you two straight people to hang out with.
Yeah, I was like, so it's been a little colder this weekend.
Yeah, is that how it started?
No, not at all. I was, because I had a class earlier that day, so I was coming in kind of hot.
Yeah, and you had stuff to talk about. Like,
I got very defensive about the Barbie nomination snubs in my society and the individual class, because pretty much my professor was saying that it kind of, all of the discourse around like Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie being snubbed took away from the
Ryan Gosling's nomination, which is so well deserved.
No,
I'm just kidding.
America Ferrera's.
Yeah. Oh, which, yeah, sure. Who was like, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Because there haven't been many Latina actresses nominated for Academy Awards. I think she's the third, which is fucking crazy.
Wow.
That's so low.
Three is not
That's
a lot.
That's so
at all.
Low.
You know, we've
when
talked about
When are we getting
this.
Brown Panther, bitch?
We've talked about this before, about how, like, you know, no one wants to talk about how Hispanics, Cuban, like Latinos largely in a lot, have not had their day in the sun in a lot of the same ways that a lot of other.
Oh, we've had our day in the sun, honey, and our fingers are sore from it.
We've had too many days in the sun.
Driving hour north to Ventura or Oxnard, you see what I'm
to
talking
not
about.
Have our metaphorical day in the sun.
Yeah, and so I thought that she was coming after the fact that it was like white feminist discourse, because everyone was all up in arms about that, and Hillary Clinton also tweeted her disappointment around Barbie being snubbed. Yeah. People were like, oh, she's not going to say anything about Gaza, but she. But I'm like, why pit Barbie against an actual like genocide that's going on? Like, add a way to not give Gaza the weight it actually deserves if you're going to actually put it on the same plane as like anything film related.
Right. And that's also probably part of their point is like, well, Gaza is that important. So Hillary Clinton's going to sound off for the first time.
Also, do you know who you're talking about?
Yeah, I know.
She gets so much money from Israel.
Exactly. So once, you know, you're not wrong, but, you know, you're talking into the void there. It's Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got a little defensive.
I got a little defensive over my favorite war hawk, Hillary.
Well, no, about Barbie, my right. actual favorite war hawk. And I was like, by then the topic had changed, and I go, okay, Barbie nominations. Like, that's how I started, and everyone was like, oh boy, like,
here can comes, of worms,
here comes
buddy.
This, like, faggy tidal wave about to, drench us in his opinion. And I was like, I don't think the director of the highest grossing film of the year around the world that broke records should be snubbed an Oscar nomination. And she was like, oh, I more meant that like it's taking air out of the conversation around America Ferrera. And I was like, fair. It's fair.
But we love America Ferrera.
We love her.
And I think the bigger snub, because I think Margot Robbie is the bigger snub because I felt like Greta Gerwig was always thought of as on the bubble director-wise, because as successful and fun, and we all liked the Barbie movie, it wasn't a perfect movie, and there were some like jerky directorial decisions. And also, I can't ignore the fact that it is a massive Mattel commercial. So that is also another thing.
That's why it's a hard thing to thread.
Right. That's why.
That's the obvious villain. But instead, they went with Ken.
Right.
Giving Ryan Gosling more screen time and endearing him
and thereby giving him a fucking Oscar nomination.
Kind of, dude.
You self-fulfilling prophesied your way into. It is like ironic. Like, it's so layered in irony that it's you can't believe that the Academy would actually make it play out the way that it did, because it's like a joke wrote itself.
Yeah, it reinforces all of the things Barbie talks about.
Yeah, I know. So now you just like Barbie was already not like vitriolic, but like added to the discourse. Now you like created this whole new discourse around this discourse, which makes it like more clumsy now and layered. And so I'm just like, I'm resentful of like, oh, now we just got another fucking thing to talk about and be pissy about. Margot Robbie, though, such a phenomenal acting job. So it's like that was a snub, I think, acting wise. But it's funny that people were talking about
that was like mostly like special effects. That was not visual effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Those things were done on a soundstage.
That's why also like, I think set design is very obvious. I'm sure it was nominated for that and stuff. And it will win. There's no way it won't win for that.
Don't fucking jinx it. Cause I want them to walk away with something. Again, not my favorite film of the year, but they will
walk away with things. And I think set design is the obvious one. You know, I'll just say like, I feel like it's deserving of that. For sure, at the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, I would never snub you because you're my cousin, and you'd certainly never snub me.
No, because this is the Guantanamo Bay's podcast.
A Cuban cousin, Kiki.
And we're just warming up for Oscar season until further notice.
Yeah, and I thought it'd be fun today to talk about Saltburn, because Brian hadn't seen it yet.
I hadn't.
It is...
Pulling up the notes. We got stuff to talk about.
Because we did drink 2 bottles of white wine when we saw it.
Mm-hmm. As the characters of Saltburn were fairly apt to do. A lot of white wine being drunk in that movie.
Really? I didn't notice that.
Well, just like any kind of aristocratic, kind of daytime drink. It was like a lot of champagne, white wine, sparkling wine, stuff like that. I clocked that,
But no mojitos.
Uppers, downers, poppers, stoppers.
It's not overtly Cuban.
What's that? It's not Cuban.
It's not Cuban.
No.
But I saw some parallels.
Go ahead.
That I wanted to explore with you.
Can I talk about like what made us watch Saltburn in the first place?
Yeah.
So Julian came up to me and he was like, I really want us to watch Saltburn and talk about it on the pod because there's so many apt metaphors for Cuba. And I was like, okay. Halfway through Saltburn, I turned to him and I was like, what does this have to do with Cuba? He's like, you know what? It probably has nothing to do with Cuba. I think I just wanted to watch Saltburn again. I love the movie. We have plenty to dive about as far as the movie.
What happened was once we were a bottle in and an hour in, I was like, actually, Brian, I don't see that many parallels to Cuba.
Yeah.
But I could still like argue my stance.
Go ahead. We're here now.
Oh, shit. Like right now?
Yeah. Like right
now. Oh, fuck.
Time starts now.
Unfolds a piece of paper.
It's all crumpled.
That looks very dirty. So Barry Keoghan's character pretty much takes the wealth of this family. I should have started by saying spoiler alert. But that's what the whole movie is essentially. Is like he sexually preys on every member of this aristocratic English family to then essentially take over their property.
Right.
The estate of Saltburn, as they call it. Saltburn.
Right.
Which like, why do they call it Saltburn?
I don't think they ever broke down the, the name, like the story behind the name of that.
What is a Saltburn?
I have no idea.
I imagine
it just sounds cool to me.
It does sound cool. I imagine it's like how your skin could get irritated from salt, right? Don't you picture that?
Like in the old days where they used salt for like medicine, food, like everything, like salt was just a currency. I'd imagine that there was a lot more applicable, reasons to get burned by it, I guess.
Well, I'm just picturing like sandpaper would cause like a burn, as would salt, because it's so dermabrasive.
Yeah. I'm literally looking up.
I see you looking at something.
Okay, so there is an actual town in England named Saltburn.
Oh.
So I don't know if there's a manor or an estate.
Can you look up the filming locations for the movie on IMDb? Thank you so much.
Okay. Go pontificate while I do that.
I will. So I wanted to compare Barry Keoghan's character, once again, the usurper, the guy that kind of overthrows this entire family. I wanted to frame him or draw a parallel between him and the Communist Party and Bautista and the powers that held Cuba before the revolution are are the family.
So Barry Keoghan's Fidel Castro.
Yeah. And a few others, but yes.
Right. Barry Keoghan's La Revolución.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. And that family. Yeah, so but, I get, okay.
But this is where the comparison falls apart.
Okay, go ahead.
The revolution wasn't a coup. Mm-hmm. Was it? Like, it didn't come from inside the government, did it?
Well, it came from within the populace. You know, it came from within.
But isn't a coup, like, specifically, like, some sort of faction of the government turning against the larger body?
A coup is any overthrowing of a government. You know,
so it's a coup, baby.
Yeah.
Cuba.
Who?
Jeez.
Wow.
Shoot me.
It's been right in front of us the whole time, and none of us ever thought.
We spelled Saltburn backwards, guys, and you won't believe this, but it spells Havana.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all that to say, I know what you mean, like the Batista regime, which was American-backed, but also...
And very grandiose in nature, I thought. Like, at least the powers that
it sure
were.
Seemed like it, yeah, to hear
very ostentatious time. I mean, mm-hmm. That's where those Cadillacs that you see in all of your friends' travel photos, that's the era that those Cadillacs hail
exactly.
From.
It came from the luxury that existed there in the 50s.
Yeah.
That does not anymore.
Yeah. And something to be said about, like, overthrowing the old guard.
Right.
Which maybe was corrupt, but there was also something, like, steady...
Yeah.
About it.
And there's a steadiness to, you know, the communist regime, I guess. That's
yeah, to a
existed.
Fault.
Right. A steadiness that's gotten them into, like, their present economic and social situation. So, frankly, it looked like the way that Barry Keoghan took it over, it wasn't really going to last or, like.
Ooh. Brap, shots fired.
Well, it would last until.
Until he died.
Until the party's over. Which could be actually a lot sooner now that he's like kind of he kind of did exactly what he set out to do in his life. So now all that's left to do is die. There's no more goals.
Dance naked around the house and die.
Yeah, apparently.
And yeah.
Until one of those.
So this is a pretty solid parallel that I want to explore here.
You didn't. This came back around. I came back around to it.
Yeah. And I must admit, me shoehorning Saltburn into this podcast is me shamelessly angling for Zoomer listens. Speaking of Zoomer influence,
it's less cool now that you brought it up, but go ahead.
Well, we won't put this part on TikTok. No. Our TikTok is dormant and we are alive, baby.
I know. Yeah, we're alive.
The sleepier that thing gets, the more
the better we are.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. But
not all roads have to run through TikTok, I guess.
And I think I mentioned this, but I saw the Mean Girls musical movie last week, which was like such an aberration. Before I even saw it, I was just like, why are you doing this to me, Tina Fey? Huh. Like, I saw that movie 5 times in theaters.
But it's a formula that we've seen. Movie, musical, movie about musical.
She's barely cold.
I know. But let's be real. Mean Girls came out 20 years ago. The original Mean Girls.
I'm 14 years old. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know, Julian. It's something all millennials need to hear.
And in the trailer, they say, not your mother's Mean Girls. And I was just like, wow, dude.
Yeah,
like,
well, you know, mom's 20.
Just because my brother had a baby at 18 means I have to? Jesus.
It's like, Julian, your brother had a baby at 31.
Yeah. That might as well be 18 when you say that to me.
It is a millennial 18.
31's a millennial 18. But I was like,
there's your episode title. Go ahead.
But I was shit talking the movie to my friend Maddie, who I saw it with, while we were like in line to get our parking validated because we went to the Grove, and there were these two Gen Z kids that came up behind us and were like, I totally agree. And I was like, so you agree? You think your Mean Girls adaptation is really ugly?
So they didn't like it either.
Yeah. It was just like overly like PC surprise.
No, people give Zoomers shit. And like with anything, it's the vocal minority.
They're autistic, but they're good people.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
They're like literally. I dated one once. Yeah.
I know, for 5 minutes.
You met, actually, of all my men, that's the one you met.
In the 30 fucking odd years we've known each other.
That's plus, the only one.
That's the only romantic partner.
I think he
of
was
yours.
22 to my 30.
No, you're. I think you were like...
I was the Rossamund Pike to his Barry Keoghan, to bring him back
to
Saltburn.
I don't know. In terms of gay age differences, like, you're like a year older
than
him.
That's a matter of weeks, yeah.
Yeah, that's weeks.
Yeah, but he didn't have the wherewithal to like... tell me he was dating someone else. He just very graciously broke up with me. Like most, I feel like most
wouldn't do that.
Well, most millennials would say, hey, there's kind of someone else I've also been talking to.
At some point when y'all are talking, like they would say that.
Like, yeah, like he ended it. And then within a week, he was like Instagram official with another guy.
Oh, sure.
So I was like, I get it. You were dating us at the same time, which is fine. But like, it was the not knowing that gouged me.
I see. Really?
And he's between a rock and a hard place, because either he breaks up with me nicely and then I figure out about it, or he tells me on the phone, which is shitty.
That's why I said really, because then he could have been like, and he fucking told me to my face. Like, at least don't tell me. And then
that's
just
fair.
Yeah. Anyway. It's like people always complain. I feel like people, they want to have it both ways, where sometimes they're just like, and he lied to me about her. Or they'll be like, and he just like told me, like stone cold. And I'm like, well, what, you know, like.
She said, I'll pay the bill.
Yeah, yeah. I guess like don't fuck up in the first place. That's what I try to do. But
yeah. Yeah. And by dating two of us, like kind of seriously, he fucked up.
Kind of serious. Yeah, I guess.
He fucked up.
Y'all were booed up a little
bit. But he didn't want to be in the position to apologize, which I understand.
It was COVID.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Just kidding.
I mean, I don't know.
We were all having it rough then.
Yeah. And I have nowhere to go with this or to tie it back to Saltburn.
So, try to draw a parallel between Mean Girls and Saltburn. Go.
Okay, fun. The movie musical or the original?
All of it. All pieces of art available to you in the Mean Girls.
I'll say this. Saltburn of 2023 is far more irreverent than the Mean Girls of 2024. How's that for a comparison?
Fair. How does Saltburn, and obviously Saltburn is more extreme and pushes the envelope visually.
And it's very homoerotic. Like growing up in Texas, I would have had to have sought that movie out. But now that it's part of like internet discourse, I'm so heartened by that.
Right. But what I was going to say was Saltburn pushes the envelope in a way that Mean Girls of 2004 or 5 didn't.
It did. That's a mean movie for young adults.
Mean Girls
yeah, is a very edgy, sardonic film.
It is. Yeah, it's full of Tina Fey.
It's the Heathers of our generation.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell that to Tina Fey. I'm like, how would you feel, even though you've had the grace of 40 years to get over what a masterpiece it was, but how would you feel if I fucked with Heathers?
But yeah, and Tina Fey is probably just looking at you being like, dude, I agree. Like, what do you want from me? Like, this is what they
got rid of the word slut. Not once is the word slut uttered in the Mean Girls.
The word slut is so foundational
to the original
universe.
100%. And in that moment, I was like, oh, like Tina and her husband who composed Mean Girls are so beholden to the suits that they're like, sure, yeah. If we need to take out the sluts to give it a PG-13, we'll do it. And right. and in doing
they
so,
probably they did it reluctantly, but they had to do it.
I mean, they compromised the original IP. And so what is...
You're not wrong.
What... I mean, why do it?
And I think she knows that. And I think, why do it?
I think as those coins hit her account, she is forgetting that.
But
and
as,
you know what?
That's exactly
okay.
Right. Yeah.
I exactly. just want her to listen to this.
Okay.
And to apologize to me in person.
Okay.
Next time she's in LA. All
right.
Over an expensive coffee that she pays for.
I was always a 30 Rock person more so than Parks and Rec.
I know.
Yeah.
So you could be the Tina Fey apologist.
Can I make a very broad generalization?
Sure.
I feel like women tend to lean a little bit more towards liking Amy Poehler. Guys like Tina Fey a little bit more on average.
Call me gay, bro?
Yeah, and gay men. There, I said it. But no. That's just what
I love Amy Poehler.
Right.
She has a great book called Yes, Please.
And I haven't read Yes, Please, but I did love...
the one with Alec Baldwin's arms. It's like Tina Fey.
Bossy Pants. Yeah.
Bossy Pants.
Loved that book.
I've
read a lot of comedy biographies. It's far and away the best one.
That's why it's so frustrating to see Mean Girls in this iteration. Is like, it's
watered down.
Yeah, it's her writing, and then it's having left it in a hurricane for 2 days. Whereas Saltburn, I think there was something
very few filters there.
Very few filters. I could imagine a lot of people were nervous to finance it. And we're going to get into spoilers, people. So get ready.
Oh, we already did. That was the first
we already
thing
have,
say.
But I'm going to keep going. Like, we see Barry Keoghan humping a grave, you know, that's just been filled. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, shit like that. I saw that with an audience. And in that moment, I was like, yes, like, finally, the cinema that we deserve.
Yeah, yeah. That must have been what it was like when you were in the 70s watching a movie. And like John Waters showed you something truly shocking, and you're just like, "Oh wow!" In the theater with everyone here, like,
you yeah, could do this. Yeah, this you want me to see this in public?
I think if you're ever thinking, "Is this legal? Is this legal or is this permitted? Is this allowed?" That means that's good cinema.
Damn.
Yeah, and that's just my own barometer. That's just been something personal that.
And that's because I'm a jaded film goer. I'm like, right. You know, just disturb me, please. Like,
but also
it's like
also,
how your taste buds get more more desensitized, right? So you're drawn to like blue cheese and like lemon wedges and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I'll never be a blue cheese fan. And like, don't just like shock me for the sake of shocking me. It needs to fit some kind of role into a narrative. That's.
Do you feel that the perverse scenes in Saltburn were warranted?
That's a really good question, because maybe I have to take each of them individually. But I think given that the whole becomes greater than the sum of the parts in terms of the film itself, I'll just go ahead and say, yeah, they're warranted, because it is like a very complete movie. And those scenes are kind of, in a way, not like a focal point, not the focal point, but they play a huge role.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the fact that it has that in it, it's well acted and well executed. The filming style is really compelling. I'm like, that's good cinema. So,
also, it was a wonderful moment of allyship when Rossman Pike came on screen as the like detached rich bohemian mom. And you were like, she's the best part of this movie.
Within three lines.
Yeah.
I identified that. And I was not wrong.
I was like, I knew he was my cousin.
Yeah, he's still
he made
like,
fuck vaginas or whatever, but he's still my cousin,
like,
darn.
He has
it.
A gay sensibility of like cinematic excellence.
And I'm not surprised that it didn't get a single nomination, but that one did kind of hurt. Where I was like, come on, like I would have loved for Rossman Pike to get an
original screenplay? I don't know. Like,
I don't think I got anything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I think it's because the Academy tends to be pretty averse to sexy shit.
And like, once again, it's like it's World War II, or if you play someone who's special needs, or now Indigenous stories are hot too. So those three things, World War II, Indigenous, special needs,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah. All three, that's a slam dunk.
All three, yeah, if you can play.
We're getting Lily Gladstone in a Forrest Gump remake, but it's just the Vietnam War part. She's going to play a special ed soldier.
And she also has World War II flashbacks. So we get that in there too.
Yeah. Yeah. Vague memories of the Holocaust. Even though she's a Native American.
She's a Native American Jew in the Holocaust during Vietnam. And she has she's also Forrest Gump.
Oh, she's been replaced by a trans actress. So you enjoyed it, I think. You enjoyed
the
movie?
I liked the movie a lot. I can't
we got
wait
a little
to watch
too sauced. I was like, I don't know if he's even following the plot.
No, we got
points.
Appropriately sauced. No, we were just, it was commentary all throughout.
The girls were chatting away.
Yeah, they were.
As they tend to do.
Yeah. No, we got sauce. We were chatty. But I know the movie. I will watch it again. I will show it to Hong. She's excited to watch
I think your Scorpio girlfriend would very much like that movie.
Yeah, I know. And she'll pretend to be... I mean, she can be squeamish as I can during certain parts. But she'll stomach it. And she'll be like, what the fuck? But then she'll keep talking about it for weeks.
You know? That's a good movie.
That's a good fucking movie.
Yeah. Also, as I think through the like parallels between Barry Keoghan and the revolutionary forces in Cuba. Another spoiler. You figure out at the end that Barry Keoghan had planned this from the jump. He meets the young son of this family, young scion that he's at school with.
Right.
And befriends him because he kind of takes this, he pretends to be poor. He pretends he has a flat tire on his bicycle, which he himself deflated.
So he orchestrates this. He manipulates.
He orchestrates it from the very first exchange, which blows the audience's mind because like he's withstood this. Because
you're like, well, all the circumstantial stuff that led him to this. But you realize like he literally invented those circumstances.
Right.
From Jump Street.
Right. So. And that may not be accurate in terms of like what the revolutionary forces did, how they planted the revolution.
Well, here's what I will say.
I don't think it was as insidious.
Here's what I'll say. Well, maybe not as insidious, but I do think it was that long of a game, because the revolution is one of them out of the, you know, 20th century revolutions. There's like not as much known, or like there's a lot of vagueness around the Cuban Revolution compared to a lot of other kind of like countries.
Go on.
But one thing that I think a lot of people know is like this was orchestrated over really decades that really culminated in the late 50s with the Cuban Revolution. But this was like a struggle and discourse and kind of series of protests and ultimately a revolution that evolved, you know, throughout the 50s, you know, pretty much, and like even earlier than that potentially. So the way that Barry Keoghan's character played the long game in terms of that, like, you know, starting slow, one domino falling, two dominoes falling to ultimately get the bag, I think there's a parallel there.
Totally.
Yeah.
Beyond that, do you see any parallels?
Okay, so the fact that he supplanted a kind of bougie, like ruling class that was there, you know, check. The fact that you could argue he might not even do as good of a job or is potentially doing a worse job than the people he supplanted, also check. And the fact that it culminated over like a long period of like dissent and disillusionment, also check. So there's three.
And right a there. Potential fourth check would be, what does Saltburn look like now?
Egg mother fucking Zachary. You,
the film ends with it, with him just dancing naked around the house, and you're like, does he have like a staff?
That family did. Yeah. You know, they had jobs going there. But it's like, yeah.
First he took our family, then he took our jobs.
It's like, yeah, a plantation's inherently evil, but is it even more evil if just one person's there than like a whole family?
And I don't think, and that's why the movie is kind of anachronistic for this time that we're in, is like, mm-hmm. It's not a moral tale.
No.
It's just one piece of shit yielding to another.
And I feel like we are very much questioning what are our morals right now.
And in a way, it's more of a modernist versus postmodernist approach. Like postmodernism, it was like, yeah, everything sucks and then you die. Mm-hmm. Whereas modernism is more like everything sucks, but maybe there's a way forward.
Mm-hmm.
But Saltburn's very postmodernist, where it's just like, yeah, he inherits the house. It's probably going to go to shit. It's just one purveyor of wealth to the next.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, and I was thinking about this earlier today, like, just the cultural attitude seems to be more forward-looking than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, to film nerd out a little bit more, I saw this film today called Whore by Ken Russell, which is very early 90s. It's a comedy, but it's like seeing a prostitute that's like abused constantly and just tonally it's so detached from what it's actually about. I mean, that was so, it was such a privileged time.
Did you like it? Do you like the movie?
I enjoyed it. Okay.
This is a new movie.
No, it came out the year of our birth, 1991.
Okay.
And so I'm saying in the 90s, you sort of had more of a pervasive streak of pessimism and irreverence and ironic detachment.
Right, because it was like things were like almost going so well socially, domestically, that like you like
there was no incentive to give a fuck.
Right. So it's like,
and then the pussy hats came on and everything changed. And I think that's because each side is equally reactive now, and the cycles of reactivity, as I said over shortened. Vodka at dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those cycles have sped up.
Yeah.
So in our fragmented cultures, those cycles speed up. You put more of an onus on false symbols.
You're like so fucking smart.
I know. It's true.
You're like in grad school or something.
It's true. I'm pretty smart.
Yeah. You have your moments.
Fuck you. Yeah. I have one giant moment. It's called my life. My entire life.
Put that on my tombstone.
Yeah.
I had one giant moment.
I thought of the phrase, I said the phrase, I meant to survive. I don't remember the context. And I was like, that's actually a very funny tombstone inscription.
Yeah.
It's like, I meant to survive. It's like, well, what'd you think was going to happen, numbnuts?
Well, I'm here.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for you to show Saltburn to Hong so I could get her unbridled Vietnamese post-communist thoughts.
Yes, yes. It'll be. And you know what? I'll make
and
sure.
And this is a Jacob Elordi Stan podcast. I don't have to repeat that.
Okay, okay. I was just going to say, I'll make sure that she'll filter all those things through her, you know, through her processing of this movie and then be like, okay, here are my thoughts, but then here are my post-communist Vietnamese thoughts. And those are separate from my other thoughts. But we stand by Lordy. I just thought that
she'd be like, these are my post-communist thoughts. I want a remake.
I want a remake.
I want a sequel. That shit was good.
Yeah. A lot of people are talking about how it was kind of a film bred out of the, and I kind of called it, admit, how well did I do with my predictions early on in the movie?
Pretty well, because I'd already seen it. So Brian immediately was like, oh, he's going to like try
to,
this
is going to happen.
That's like, they're all going to die and he's going to try to take everything. I was like, fuck.
And it was like pretty early on in the movie.
It was.
Yeah. Pretty good stuff. But, there's something I was going to say about.
We could just sit here.
Yeah, we could.
First one to blink.
What were we just talking about?
You're asking me? Bitch, I don't know. The color blue. I don't know.
Vietnamese unfiltered thoughts. Barry Keoghan.
Jacob Elordi being a snack. Being a whole ass meal.
We definitely stand Jacob Elordi.
That's what you meant to say.
Good actor.
Yeah. Fantastic actor. I thought it was clever to cast him as Elvis in Priscilla, which does not show Elvis in a very flattering light because he was like essentially her keeper, mm-hmm. her owner of sorts. And so, because he doesn't have blue eyes. And at first I was like, why are you going to cast an actor that doesn't have blue eyes to play Elvis? And then it was like, oh, because like, you know.
Because he could still have the also, if he's dark Elvis, then it makes sense that he's like. Also, he came.
Yeah,
out,
he's dark Brandon,
and he came from his abusive turn in Euphoria, you know, to
right
to be like just abusive Elvis, you know. So he was pretty much abusive Elvis in Euphoria, frankly.
Yeah, he's one of those where I'm like, you are kind of a movie star, and then I definitely forced Brian to watch 24 hours with Jacob Elordi on the Vogue channel on YouTube.
Yes, and Julian's like just so taken with it. I'm like, yeah, it's like a guy answering questions. And Julian's like, but don't you see how like he's totally a water sign and like how his energy is like benevolent?
Well, and he's well dressed. His house is really well decorated. He's got like a Japanese poster of a Rebel Without a Cause on his living room wall. Like you could tell he's just like a movie fan and like a sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas Barry Keoghan, I'm like, put your money in your front pockets.
I feel the same way though. It's like I feel like Barry Keoghan, you know, I think of him as like this charming little street urchin
that I want street
take.
Urchin.
Yeah, I just want to take it.
Fresh off the pages of a Dickens novel.
Kind
of.
Where Jacob Elordi, I'm like, you're doing fine. I don't have to, you know, help you or befriend you or, you know, you don't need me at all in your life. But yeah. Barry Keoghan, I'm like, we need each other. And so that's where I feel a little bit more simpatico.
I was catering an award show and I saw Barry. I did not see Jacob. And he was in a very fun suit and actually appeared much nicer than I would have guessed he would look. So
yeah, dude.
Stars, they're just like us.
Some are. Usually the ones who grow up in these mean streets as Barry K did.
He did, yeah. Like a lot of foster homes and
yeah.
Boxing.
Also overlap between us.
Between you and Barry? Yeah. What was the first bit of overlap?
Male.
Okay.
White.
Irish-ish.
Irish.
Irish.
Yeah.
He's Irish.
We have Anglo-Saxon roots between us. Some genetic overlap.
Yeah. I would recommend this film. My mom was sitting next to me and she was on Facebook and she was like, well, someone hated Saltburn. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And she read me the whole, her friend's post on Facebook.
Nothing better than like a boomer movie review. on Facebook.
It was very much that. It was like, I was shocked. I thought this would be a warm-hearted comedy.
Oh, Mamma Mia. What I was you like, think I think that?
And that wasn't even like a misadvertisement. I just think they didn't know what they were getting into.
But there's a lot of talk about how Parasite kind of spurned the whole Saltburn phenomena.
That's what I think we both were getting to.
We were getting to that.
Saltburn is a film that's part of this milieu of post-Occupy critiques, post-Occupy Wall Street critiques yeah. on the quote 1%. Another example, Triangle of Sadness last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Parasite again.
There have been a lot of. Yeah. And so it's like Parasite was the inciting moment of these, like you said, this milieu of stories that have been.
And
told.
You could argue so far it's been the critical peak of that kind of film.
You could say that. And since Saltburn takes that genre in a new direction, in a more
like
misanthropic, sexual, misanthropic, like punk rock. I don't know how you want to call it.
It's
like,
punky.
Yeah. But and just a new, and we'll say even twisted. Parasite's twisted, but this is like twisted kind of for twisted's sake in a way
I think Parasite is scarier.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
you?
Sure.
It's more of like a conventional horror thriller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. More horror elements in Parasite.
Saltburn is like a sexual thriller. No, I'm saying Parasite's the scarier film.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry if I said that incorrectly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Parasite's the scarier film. Saltburn is maybe more shocking in ways, but less horrific.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
Yeah.
And also takes a genre narratively in a different direction that... You know, I think is like a twist, and unfortunately we're probably going to see a lot of people imitate it poorly. But
and there's something to be said too about eating the 1% and then and like collaging that with more sexual things in the wake of Epstein.
Wow.
I'll go there.
Oh, you did.
I think now that conversation is there are more sexual facets to it because of
wealth inequality now is like a sexual conversation.
It totally relates
to sexuality and like trafficking. And also the umbrella term for trafficking is like reach all these new legal definitions. So now you just see like new trafficking charges and like all this stuff emerge from people from stuff that's like that came out years ago. And now that's like they're finally getting their due for it. They're getting, you know, busted for it. So it's like there's this whole sexual component in wealth that.
And I think puritanical fears that already existed around people's private sex lives, but you conflate that then with wealth insecurity and we're off to the races.
Yeah.
That's why that'll be imitated. It hits a nerve for people.
Yeah, because you're like, wow, you know, it was I the pill could go down a little bit easier when I just thought you were like a normal person like me who had nicer things. And but still, you know, faithful to their family and everything. But to know that you guys really are just having a big old picnic, like constantly at our expense and like laughing at us, like I'm going to want to fucking prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law. Or I want to, you know, I want to do something to get even because
and the idea.
Unfair. Yeah.
I mean, Prince Andrew implicated in the Epstein stuff, like the royals are sexually corruptible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's not just him either.
Because like the family that owns Saltburn, they're noblemen.
Right, right.
So there's also that whole facet of it of like, you know, wondering aloud about the sexual malfeasance of royals.
Of nobility.
Of nobility.
Quote unquote nobility. And that's the whole thing. I could take it lying down if I thought you were truly being noble. Well, the wealth should go to the noble. To the nobility, they're noble, but you're not even noble.
Yeah, it's
so
not
why
my
you're fucking rich.
It's not my fault. I seduced you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, now, that really is kind of the perspective of that character.
Totally, totally.
And arguably of the audience.
Mm-hmm, exactly, because the audience is Barry Keoghan, and honestly fantasizes about doing exactly what he does all the time.
I dance naked in my apartment. Why would I not dance naked in a country estate?
Yeah.
To a wonderful song from the 90s. That's had a wonderful revival.
I know.
I went to Barry's today to get a workout in, and there was a remix of Murder on the Dance Floor that was playing.
I'm sure.
Oh, it was so good.
Who sang that song?
Sophie Ellis Baxter.
Yeah, she's going to get a bunch of royalty checks.
Totally. I read an interview with her. She was like, yeah, it's so great to like see how
to be rich again. Yeah. I missed it.
And this director, who's probably 5 or 6 years older than us, was like peak age for that song. She was probably like in her late teenage years.
There's your best director nominee.
I know.
Right? Like, you know, once again, it's like there are great female directors out there right now.
Did you see Emerald Fennell's first film, A Promising Young Woman?
I didn't. I was interested in it, but
I'd be curious to see it. Yeah. It's kind of like an edgy takedown of like Me Too-ness, but also like reinforces the whole Me Too perspective. It's an interesting watch.
A lot of films.
Her movies feel very contemporary to me.
They are. They're extreme. Just what little I knew about Promising Young Woman, I was like, this is a contemporary film. I appreciate that. But I saw From Saltburn, I'm like, this is, even though it takes place a lot of it in like the mid 2000s, it's still very contemporary thematically.
Which is another point of entry for me. Like, you're going to have like MGMT playing while like a bunch of kids drink Dom Perignon.
And watch Superbad.
And play tennis in suits.
Yeah.
Like, that was so tapping into like 18 year olds, like Julian.
Remember Ralph Lauren?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know they have like the plastic Ray-Bans that are like red and white and stuff. It just like tapped my nostalgia muscle.
And that was before people villainized the quote unquote wealthy until, you know, because we're just like, oh man, you know.
That's also true. It was kind of in the twilight of that former era, just before the Great Recession, right. Just before all these bailouts. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Figuring out just how nasty the ruling class was.
Yeah, that changed people's perspective of the wealthy forever.
Yeah. Like Barry Keoghan's Ascent kind of dovetails historically
with the subprime financial crisis.
Yeah.
Subprime mortgage crisis.
Wow.
Yeah. That is crazy.
That can't be a coincidence.
No. Yeah, yeah, because I guess like...
I feel like we're the first people to tap into that, though.
I can't wait. Dear... What's her name?
Emerald.
Dear Emerald.
The Emerald Fennell.
Subject line. We cracked it.
Spam.
I know you've been waiting for this email, Emerald, from... The app, there's like thousands of other emails from people being like,
yeah, the email directly above us is like, Barbie 2, read now.
The financial crisis 2008. Oh, that's fun.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did.
I was happy to share it with you. It was nice to see it at home.
You know what I close out? What I want to close out with?
What?
I want to talk about just your completely unfiltered thoughts. You know who's going to the Super Bowl?
Taylor Swift.
Well, okay, so the Kansas City Chiefs. Taylor Swift, yes.
They're the same thing.
Right, right. But that is one team. Do you know who the other team is?
Oh, I know the Lions didn't go. Oh, it's the 49ers.
It was the 49ers. What are your Super Bowl predictions? What are your thoughts?
You want me to guess who wins?
I just want you to tell me like
between
okay,
two teams I know nothing about.
For the who? Audience, Julian is not a sports fan, but he is a pop culture fan. The Super Bowl is more.
Yeah, this voice right here does not belong to someone that's a sports fan, in case you were thinking differently.
It's more of a pop culture event than it is a football game, though, the Super Bowl. So pop culturally.
Okay.
Usher's supposed to perform.
I know.
What do you think is going to happen at the Super Bowl? What are you looking forward to? Just tell me your thoughts on the fact that it's...
I'm only teams. Answering this because I know we won't have an episode before the Super Bowl. So I'll tell you right now.
Go ahead.
I think one of the two teams is going to win.
Yeah. That's okay. Fair.
I think Taylor Swift at one point will cheer.
Yeah.
I think Travis Kelce, whatever the fuck that cute little guy's name is. I think he's going to do the heart hands to Taylor.
To her? Like he's going to score a touchdown?
Is that only when he does it?
Well, you know, on a big play, but usually you do like a celebration like that on like a big play or
I think
touchdown.
He'll get a touchdown.
Okay.
I don't know how many he'll get, but he'll get at least one.
That's kind of a safe bet. Well, like not, you know, one touchdown's good. If you have one touchdown in a game, that's a great game. But you can expect that from Travis Kelce right now.
Okay. And I expect Gatorade will be dumped on someone.
The winning coach, you know, normally.
Okay. Don't give me
don't
all the
spoilers.
Answers.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Okay.
Spoiler
sorry.
Alert. You may have seen Saltburn, but I have not seen a football game, Brian.
I have not seen this year's Super Bowl yet, Brian.
What else do I think? I don't know. I think there will be a commercial with one of the Kardashian Jenners.
Oh, man.
I think there will be...
What company do you think will have...
I think I'll eat chips. What?
What company do you think will have, like, the best Super Bowl ad?
Oh, that's a fun question. Whole Foods.
You're asking me to pick out of a billion fucking brands.
I know.
The cynic in me is like probably some pharmaceutical commercial that couldn't get aired in any other country. It's like, whoa, Tom Hanks was in a Lexapro commercial?
No, I'm trying to think of like what companies. Like, there's usually a car company that does really well, a tech company that does really well, you know. That
Yeah, they like reunite Olivia Wilde with Harry Styles for Salesforce.
That would, using AI, then that would be some shit. I feel like traditionally, you know, Budweiser and Bud Light were always...
They used to have the frogs.
Advertising kings. Yeah, they were like kings of the Super Bowl, but I don't think that's that way anymore.
Well, they had to put Dylan Mulvaney in it and then rock the boat party. Too much. They just had to ruin the party.
No, I mean, it's...
Someone that's openly trans.
It was all stupid. I mean, the backlash is stupid. Anytime you care that much...
I'm kidding, by the way.
Yeah, no,
I want many openly trans people to be in every commercial. Keep going.
I know. It's just like the level of back, like, holy shit. It's like when you're convinced that every trans person's part of a cabal, so any trans spokesperson by proxy means that...
The ones,
like,
I know are poor.
I know, yeah. So that's why I'm like... You're blaming the wrong people, honey.
I know. They're not the one. They're like literally standing next to you in line at the factory, sis.
Yeah, but then like if you equate trans equals cabal, Dylan Mulvaney equals trans equals cabal equals Bud Light.
Bud Light equals cabal, right?
Exactly. Like that's...
Well, I hope they're back.
For some people.
I hope this time it's with Laverne Cox and Patty Harrison.
I'd love it if they just like... They had their double
down. I'd love to see Patty Harrison in any commercial.
That would be great.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I'd love it if Bud Light either went totally the opposite direction or just doubled down. Like they had Joe Rogan like, you know, bicycle kick Laverne Cox or something like that. Or
oh my God.
Or they had like, I don't know, like Dylan Mulvaney making out with Patty Harrison. It's like a Super Bowl ad. Or they run both. They just do both of those things. So that'd be punk rock as fuck.
If only they could tailor the marketing like per state. I'm surprised that's not an option. You think the channel would stand to make way more.
There are edited,
but then they wouldn't be as expensive a slot if it wasn't a national slot.
Right. They do edit like shows based on region sometimes.
It's like Disney movies with gay kisses.
Right. Yeah. You don't see those in Kuwait.
So what do you think's going to happen, Mr. Football?
Well, what'll probably happen is the Kansas City Chiefs will probably win. I don't want them to win. I'll be rooting for the Niners.
I don't want them to either.
Yeah, good. You and me both, sister. So Hong is a fan of the 49ers and she's my little baby. So,
Someone was like, you don't like the 49ers? And I was like, well, I don't have any connection to San Francisco. You're what? Like, cause I'm gay. Like, yeah, I'm supposed to go for San Francisco.
You're like, maybe
Harvey Milk died like 30 years ago.
I was about to say maybe for what it once was, you know, like, but that,
yeah, that ain't my baby.
That would not play a role in my current fandom.
Yeah. If it was the Palm Springs Queens. Pomegranates.
Yeah. The Palm Springs Pomegranates.
Then I'd be so down.
What a cute team name.
The mascot in my mind's eye is adorable.
You're not even going to describe it. You're just like...
It's a little pomegranate. What more do you need with his legs sticking out?
I kind of see like a little...
Yeah, he's
what's
cute.
What's his face like?
He's got big dilated eyes and a cute little smile. Right. A little come hizzle smile.
I'm going to use AI to conjure the Palm Springs pomegranates. And
that'd be great.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. That'll be
Please
our cover.
Please do. That's need a sports mascot I could really root for.
That's going to be our cover art.
Because Gritty
episode.
Wasn't cutting it. Gritty got close, though. I love me some Gritty.
Which one's Gritty?
He's that NHL mascot that's like shaggy and orange. You know who I'm talking about? Gritty, dude. Come on. How do I know him and you don't?
Sure. I mean, NHL. You pretty much said it. I'm
well, that's why. But still, he's totally
the
flavor
like
the of the
Flyer?
Year.
No. That's
well, I don't know Flyers, what that is.
Yeah. Like, what team is he with?
I don't fucking know. That's how good a mascot he is. He transcends cities. Look him up. Can you do me a favor? Okay. He looks like you because you both have red hair.
Gritty mascot.
With a Y.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's with the Philly Flyers. So this is...
Oh, you were right.
I was right. I just didn't know his name was Gritty. But I know this. I know this man.
That was him, officer. I'm not sorry to this man. I do know this man.
Yeah.
I will say, though, between the two teams, I would much sooner San Francisco win than Kansas City, which I've never been to, and that has Taylor Swift... kind of usurping them. She is the Barry Keegan to their Saltburn.
It's the Kansas City Swifties. Like, that's
wow.
Yeah, I said it.
Have people said that online? Surely.
No. Well, probably, but not that I read.
It's like right
this
there.
Was an original thought until we find out it wasn't original.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Bookmark that.
Commendable.
Do you have any parting thoughts for our audience before we call it a night?
Oh, wow. That was so fast.
I know.
Well, I did tell you when we were eating herring at the Russian store.
So good.
Moments after that gay porn star that I clocked checked us both out.
We saw a gay porn star, apparently.
He looked at Brian first. But still, he looked at me second. So just happy to be nominated, to quote.
He's like, he's close. With him.
Exactly. And I'm like, he is. He is not my cousin.
Literally the basis of our sketch.
But we were eating herring and I was like, oh, Brian, I have a fish story that I want to tell you about. But more than anything, I just want to unload this because it was like it started my day with like added weight that I didn't anticipate.
Yeah, what?
So yesterday I went over to my friend's house and he has a betta fish. Mm-hmm. And he's had it for maybe a year or so, but it was like not looking very good. It was close to the surface of the water, which looked weird to me. Yeah. The pump wasn't on, which ended up being a heating pump. When I asked my friend, I was like, why is this pump not on? He was like, oh, it just heats the water. It doesn't actually filter that it.
Seems important.
And I was like, well, your fish is awfully close to the surface and he looks tired. So just check that out.
Right.
Today, I wake up to a text from my friend saying, hey, you jinxed my fish. And I was like, oh, my God, what happened? He was like, it's dead. And I was like, do not pin.
Wow.
Yeah, because I went in there with, I don't do black magic, Brian. Like, I'm an incredibly histrionic, anxious, violent person, but I don't do black magic. I wouldn't kill his fish.
No. You were literally like, trying to save his fish.
And I was like, dude, I'm a Pisces. Like, I know a fish in need when I see one because I am one.
Okay, whatever legitimacy of the story.
So I guess he said he's fine. I checked in on him a few hours later, but like he was full on giving me the silent treatment. I was like, this is wild.
Well, you saw a sick fish and called it out, and he can't be mad that.
I tried to save it.
Except all the...
I didn't kill it. I tried to save it.
No. That's what I'm saying. You did the opposite. Even if...
No, I know. I'm just saying it more to the ether.
You know, for the people in the back. I get it.
Yeah. Even the people that didn't pay as much.
Even though the legitimacy of all this went out the window once you were like, I'm a Pisces. I know a fish in need. And I'm like, okay, let's focus on the pump stuff. The fact that you identified.
It wasn't a very moldy tank. So I didn't tell him, hey, you need to get a pump that isn't just a heater.
Well, if the fish is going to the surface, it's probably trying to get to a warmer spot because it's probably.
Oh, is that? You think that's what it is?
That's the
only... water didn't feel cold. I even like. I don't know. I was blowing on the water.
Or maybe it's a sick fish, but...
Maybe it was just a sick fish. I could tell by its little fins and stuff that it wasn't doing too good.
Right. But if it was going to the surface, I'm like, okay, maybe a fish is doing that to feel the heat. And so, you know, maybe the water was like cooler than it was livable for that fish. So that's kind of what I'm thinking, if it's a heater thing.
Well, my friend's going to be pretty surprised when he sees that you're my lawyer in court.
Well, no, that's literally what my mind goes to is I'm like, dude, someone tried to warn you your fish was sick and then you didn't do anything and then the fish died. So like, that's not his.
And he stuck his finger fault. In the water and the fish came up to nibble on the end of his finger. So he was like, he's fine. I was like, okay.
How long has he had the fish?
Like a year.
Okay.
I don't know if that's like a good run for a betta or not.
My parents had a fish tank for like 30 years.
Gorgeous fish tank.
Massive fish tank, like a 500.
A lot of tropical fish. Yeah, that was like Deuce Bigelow realness up in there.
It was.
Gorgeous fish tank. I just switched my screensaver on my computer from like photos I'd saved. Like,
to like a 1996 aquarium. You remember those screensavers?
Yes, but it actually moves. It's like a coral reef off like some Polynesian country.
That's cool.
And but the actual camera moves through the water, so you're seeing like different coral reefs. It's really cool.
Nice. So your parting thoughts are you just want to make sure people know that you didn't kill this fish.
I mean, yeah. I think that's worth noting.
I don't think you did, Jules.
I know, because you know my ass was like, oh my God, I killed his fish.
You're trying to save it.
Thank you. Yeah, beyond this, I don't know what else. I don't know. Do you want to say anything?
I opened for my good buddy Austin Silver for his first hour-long special that he shot over the weekend. I'll let you guys know when it comes out. We were really happy with how it went. And
Now that we're plugging things, I I thought we were going to be more, you know, familial and warm. But since we're just talking shit.
I was just going to say, I'll let y'all know when it's out, you know. Catch me outside. Go ahead, Jules.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
On February 9th, that's a Friday, if you're in LA, come see my musical improv team, Charm, make up a musical on the spot. That's at 9:30 at the Impro. It's a magical time, guys. I mean,
Improv.
At the Impro.
Yeah.
Thanks for correcting that. At the Impro on Vermont, just north of Hollywood.
Spelled like improv without the V.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. It's a magical time. We don't resuscitate fish. I can't clap a fish back to life.
Being clap these cheeks.
But I can clap these cheeks. It's a fun time. So if you're in LA, February 9th, 9:30 at the Impro, check out my team Charm.
From the Guantanamo Bay's podcast, I'm Brian Bogart.
And I'm Julian Goza.
Thank you and good night.
Hasta luego.